Hi and hello, football fans. Your old pal Dave Damashek here in Studio 66. But in just a moment, we're going to take a journey to Houston, Texas. A couple of weeks ago, I sat down with one of the sharpest guys, one of the funniest guys, one of the most personable fellas in all of pro football, Malcolm Jenkins, safety extraordinaire of the Philadelphia Eagles. We sat down, we ate barbecue, we talked about social issues, we cracked some whys. It was a glorious time, so why wait any longer than we have to? In the meantime, a reminder and a request, in fact, a demand, go to iTunes, subscribe, rate, comment, share with all your friends. We're going to be doing a lot of audio exclusive shows for you in the next several weeks here. This one, though, available in video as well. We appreciate you checking that out. NFL.com/DDFP is how you can watch it. You may want to take a look at it if you want to salivate a little bit because, man, oh, man, the barbecue that Jenkins and I had in Houston was just sublime. The greatest brisket I've ever had. Let's dig into that. Let's dig into all of it with Malcolm Jenkins right now.
Malcolm Jenkins, do you like to eat food?
I love food, actually.
I like to eat food, too. We have a lot in common. I think this is going to go great. What should we eat? Brisket seems like a good way to go.
Always am up for some ribs.
Ooh.
Baked beans. Yeah, there's not much on this menu that doesn't sound good.
All right, let's sit. Let's figure it all out today, you know?
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's not talk about something. Let's talk about everything.
Let's do it.
First of all, let's, you know, you're a man of high fashion. Everybody knows that, the bow ties, the beard, everything else. Have I reached a stage in my life where I need to follow your lead and just, you know, because I'll tell you something. I want no jive between us in this conversation.
You talking about going bald?
Well, I am going bald.
You're not.
Well,
I've seen way worse, and most of it was in the mirror. Hence why.
Well, it can't be worse than that. But yeah, no, like, I mean, that's it.
No,
but
you're good.
No, but you know, can I tell you a secret right out of the gate? Right up there, That's fake hair. They make this stuff like, you put like fake hair into your hair. Now you can't tell that I have a bald spot, but I'm just staving off the inevitable. Do I need to shave my head?
So I'm gonna give you some advice. When I did it, I made sure I had like at least 3 weeks, like a 3 week window where I had to make no appearances. I wasn't going anywhere. I wasn't gonna be in front of a camera. Like, let me try it out first.
Interesting thought. Yeah.
And I did it, and my wife liked it, so I was good after that. I was like, okay, I'll stick with it. But yeah, I was kind of, you know, dipping my toe in the water at first, just a trial basis.
I like the planning of it. So it's like, listen, this could go real wrong.
Yeah. And you got to keep the beard though, because this keeps people from looking up here.
You know, but what about, we've talked about it before. Are you raw about the James Harden thing? Because you had this before James Harden, and you.
I get a lot of those comparisons. Especially since I've been out here in Houston.
You know what? That's something.
Yeah.
We should tell everybody you're James Harden. I bet a lot of people wouldn't know the difference.
They would. He's got a strong head of hair as well. I don't think James Harden's bald at all.
I don't think people are.
They don't look past that.
Yeah, I don't think people are that observant. I think if we
his
put you
pretty,
in a Rockets jersey.
He's pretty strong, though. His is like longer. I don't like to keep mine that long, but he's got a great beard.
Let's talk about. Like I say, fashion is a thing of yours. I've been wondering about this. As you're an athlete, maybe you can shed some light on this. Why is a sports coat called a sports coat? Because you wouldn't play sports in that.
I don't know. Like, why is it called a blazer?
Trailblazer? Where are you going? Yeah, what trails are you blazing in the thing? Yeah, both of those aren't good. What should it be called?
I mean, it should just be called a jacket or a coat, like, you know, regular. But that's not cool enough. So somebody was like, you know what?
Sports jacket.
Sports coat, yeah. Blazer.
Let's what piece of clothing would be the last one you'd want to wear if you're playing a sport? It's like an ironic thing, you know?
Let's call it a sports jacket. Right. The last thing I want to put on is a nice jacket.
Mm-hmm. Where has better food, New Orleans or Philadelphia?
Ooh, so I lived in New Orleans for 5 years and fell in love with the food. New Orleans is obviously known for their food. When I went to Philadelphia, I was very concerned that I'd miss the food in New Orleans, but Philadelphia has actually surprised me. They have a lot of really good food, a lot of restaurants similar to New Orleans. The two cities are actually very, very similar, minus the Mardi Gras and all the festivals. But both of them have really, really good food, but they're different styles. If you're looking for, you know, any kind of Creole or Southern food, I've yet to find anybody who can replicate what they do in New Orleans.
I think that's the one of those places that, you know, people always say, like, ooh, if I lived in that town, I'd weigh 70 pounds extra. Mm. New Orleans, they don't even try. They're like, it's the only city I can think of. They don't even try. Like, if you go to any other city in America, they'll be like, we do have a grilled chicken option for you.
Yeah,
like,
no.
No
grilled chicken.
We're not going to give you that.
If you do, they're going to look at you crazy.
We're going to put extra thick, we'll give you a grilled chicken, but we are going to put heavy gravy on it.
We'll grill it first, then we'll deep fry it and put gravy and all kind of stuff on it.
Is chili a soup?
No, it shouldn't be.
No.
If it's of the consistency of a soup, then you made it wrong.
Would you ever, or have you ever, ordered soup and chili at the same meal?
No. That's not enough substance.
I'm inclined to agree with you, but if you did, which would be the appetizer, which would be the meal?
Oh, the soup would be the appetizer, and chili would be the meal.
That's correct.
So another question I get all the time is, back to hot dogs, because I have hot dogs in my brain. Do you consider a hot dog its own category, or do you consider it a sandwich?
You know, I've gone round and round on this. It's one of the issues of our time. I think the greatest thing you can be is a food, sort of like chili, is your own thing. And a hot dog, it owns its own category.
Exactly.
I don't know, if you're a hot dog purveyor, you don't want to be like, oh yeah, it's a sandwich. No, no, no. Or, you know, it's, no, no, a hot dog. You know, there's nothing else in the world like it.
Yeah, I mean, that's my argument, is that a sandwich is a sandwich.
Mm-hmm.
You need multiple components other than meat to be a sandwich. But a hot dog is its own thing. It has its own bun. You don't put anything else on a hot dog bun.
Mm-hmm.
It's its own form. Nothing else is shaped like a hot dog. So, you know, a hot dog is a hot dog.
I think that's a tip of the cap to the hot dog,
yeah.
Really. But along those lines, is a hamburger a sandwich?
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
Explain that one.
Because a hamburger...
Wait, hold that thought, Malcolm Jenkins.
Oh, man. Forget the hamburger.
We can talk hamburgers later.
Oh,
look at that.
Oh, my goodness. I don't know how they do it in Philly and Pittsburgh.
Oh, my goodness.
When you come down to Texas, you got to do it big,
I
all right?
I see.
And you got to have some collard greens.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Get one for Malcolm, and then let's see.
Get one for Malcolm. The rest of you.
This is for... Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, awesome.
However, you guys want to split it up now.
So what do we have here?
All right, guys. So first of all, welcome to Gatlin's Barbecue. Where love
Thank
is a
you.
Secret ingredient. We do everything with love around here.
Oh, yeah.
So hopefully the platter presents itself as the same. So over here, you got spare ribs, you got baby backs, you got smoked chicken, and you got three different sausages here. One is a venison sausage, one is a kind of a spicy kind of Creole sausage, and one is kind of a traditional pork and beef blend of a sausage there. Then we got some white meat here with some turkey, and then we got the Texas Jewel. We got moist and lean brisket right here with a little barbecue sauce and condiments.
Oh my goodness. All right.
We're gonna have some fun today.
And we just pick it all up.
Just pick it all up. Everything's eaten with your hands. You know, don't be scared. I know you got that white shirt on.
Don't worry about that.
Get him a bib.
I felt like I thought maybe you were doing this special for me. I see no need for utensils most of the time.
Not at all. Not at all. Why do you need utensils? You got five good ones right there.
That's right. I get it. It smells enough for me to know that I might move in here. I might make that into.
We got cots rented for $5 out in
the back. Is that right?
Yeah.
Perfect.
Read my mind.
Good deal, guys. I'm gonna leave y'all to it. I usually only serve Texans, Malcolm, but I'm going to let you slide with it today, all right?
I appreciate that.
All right, bro. Appreciate it, man. Y'all enjoy.
Thank you. All right.
We'll try our best, I think. Yeah. Let's do it, you know? Cheers to us for cheating life.
Cheers.
Drinking beer, eating barbecue in the middle of the day. Not a care in the world, awesome. Right? Many cares in the world. Ooh.
Is that a Creole sausage? We just talking about Creole.
Ooh, that is so delicious. Why does Malcolm have that second L in it?
You know what? I was named after Malcolm X. That's how he spelled it. So it's like a, it's, I actually get upset because a lot of people, I guess, who aren't familiar with how to spell it with only one L.
Right. It seems Malcolm. Like it should be. Malcolm.
But that's nice. Even you put that like
Malcolm.
Like there's like a little L at the end. It's like subtle. But if you got rid of it, it'd be Malcolm.
Malcolm.
Yeah, but it's Malcolm.
Malcolm.
Yeah.
Malcolm.
It's a little soft L. It softens it out.
So you're okay with the second L officially?
Oh, I love it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't like it without the L. It's like harsh, like Malcolm.
Is it a weird name though for an infant to have?
I guess what household you were in. I'm like, at some point I was an infant. Mm-hmm. I got to ask my mom if it was weird to call me Malcolm as like a 2-year-old.
Well, there are a lot of names in the world.
Yeah.
It's a mature name. Right.
Yeah,
there are names that are good for grown-ups,
yeah.
But they don't work for a baby, yeah. And vice versa.
Yeah.
Like Carl. Carl. Look, isn't he adorable? Isn't he cute? What's his name? Gary. Like, wow, that's a terrible name for a baby.
Yeah.
Well, actually, that's not a good name for a grown-up either. It's kind of weird.
But it's very mature. Like, yeah. You almost expect him to be a little bit more responsible as a 2-year-old.
Yeah, right, right. The other side of it is, though, Toby. Toby's a cute name for a little one. But you don't want to grow up and be Toby. I mean, you don't want to be Justin either as a grown-up.
I'm a black man, so nobody wants to be called Toby in my world.
I don't think that's race specific.
Nobody wants to be Toby.
Who wants to be Toby? I don't want to be a 37-year-old man named Toby.
Yeah, that's, you're right. It might be cool as a 2-year-old.
As far as that goes, was Chip Kelly's ultimate undoing in Philadelphia his first name? How do you take direction? A leader of men. Now, fellows, we've got to show up and give 60 minutes. Okay, Chip, you right?
So the only time I actually, like, in my mind, I laughed kind of at his name. Because, you know, like, in football, we like to, like, use analogies. And one of the biggest things you'll hear people say is that, oh, he plays with a chip on his shoulder. And every time I heard that in the media, in my mind, I laughed. And he'd say, like, you know, you guys got to play with motivation. Play with a chip on your shoulder. And I'm like, in my mind, I just picked a Chip Kelly.
Yeah, a little miniature Chip Kelly on your shoulder the whole time. I like I like that idea. What was he like?
He's actually, contrary to belief, he's actually a good coach, yeah, for me at least. Hmm. He's somebody who's, I think, ahead of the curve when it comes to being able to take care of players. That's one thing that he prioritized was how do you, because he understands that his program is demanding, the pace that he demands, the amount of reps. And so doing that, he understands that, all right, we have to take care of players' bodies so that they can actually even function at this kind of level. Mm. And so my first 2 years, or I played with him 2 years, in those two years, I had the most snaps of any player in the NFL. I probably played close to 2 or 3 games extra when you add up all the snaps than anybody else. But it was the best I felt in my entire career because he is a nerd when it comes to sports science. Like, that's his baby. And so, you know, I actually took a lot and learned a lot from him from that. You know, he's, I think, a young coach trying to figure out how to make his new system fit in the traditional NFL, but
it's funny because it's easy to be cynical and just say what a washout that was. I think anybody who likes football should have been rooting for his success because he was trying to do something different at the very least.
Yeah.
But why has it, you know, this far in, obviously it hasn't really worked out so well.
It's like anything, you know, when you come in to a league that is ever changing, you've got to be willing to adjust and adapt. And I think that's where his downfall has been, because I feel like his system actually could work if he adjusted it just a little bit. Because I know I got to play against Chip Kelly before I went to the Eagles. So the Saints, when I was with them, we went to Philly to play against in a playoff game against the Eagles, and we ended up winning at home. But that entire week, we were so worried about the tempo and the pace and the amount of snaps that, like, we were trying to, like, go as fast as we could in practice to get used to it within a week. I'm like, and we wanted to be simple. We probably called three defenses the entire game. And I'm like, when you know that defenses are afraid of you and they can only call three plays for the entire game, that should be an advantage. But there's one thing, when you go fast all the time, if it doesn't work, it's detrimental to your team. But when you understand that people have to adjust to that pace, all you have to do is change the pace. You can go fast like they expect you to, and then after a while, you just slow it down and see. They're going to show you what they can't disguise, so they'll show you exactly what defense they're in. Have the offensive coordinator who's in the box radio down, change the play to whatever is, you know, going to be the best play, and you're always in a good position.
Bold prediction. Will Chip Kelly have the last laugh? Will he eventually win out, or do you suppose that he'll wind up at some point?
I hope he does, honestly, because I truly believe that he has something that can really change the face of this league if applied correctly. So I really do hope that he has the last laugh. He's one of those guys, he wants to win. He cares about everything he's doing. Had some success early, but like anything, the league will catch up. People will adjust, and you always got to change what you're doing or you know, make it better. So I hope so.
Chip's latest pupil was Colin Kaepernick.
Yep.
I think it's really interesting that, you know, maybe even a year ago, 2 years ago, I don't know, when you were growing up, were you a Michael Jordan guy? Everybody kind of was, it seems.
Yeah, I think it's hard not to respect what Michael Jordan, you know.
But he never, for better or worse, and people have opinions on this, of course. It's always funny to me when people say celebrities or athletes or whatever shouldn't talk about politics, and they tisk tisk the same people that were last fall were tisk tisking about how dare Colin Kaepernick, no one wants to hear what your political opinions are,
right.
You're being disrespectful and all that, are the same people who a couple months before that were saying Muhammad Ali is one of the great human beings of the 20th century.
Yeah.
And so much of that is owed to Ali. I think that in the time that you're doing it, there are consequences to speaking out. You know, it's easy to look back and say, Ali, what a great human he was. But there were a lot of people, if you went back and dug up their opinions,
they hated
at the time.
For a while.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, that's what any historical figure is, you know, when you, at this age, when you look back, everybody talks about the great stuff, but when you talk about, when you actually go back to and research, okay, what were they like in their heyday? Like, people hated them. Even, you know, we talk about Martin Luther King as such a great life. Like, he pissed off so many people. He was in jail so many times. Like, even his I Have a Dream speech, he basically told America that you wrote black people a blank check. Like, you know, you promised us this and you didn't do it. So it's like, he wasn't this... You know, all is well, we loved them. Back then, people hated them.
It is funny, yeah. In a way, you would say, Bill Cosby has some extra baggage now. But
right,
but the way people regarded Bill Cosby versus Richard Pryor back in the 70s and 80s was like, one is, you know,
more acceptable
clean
than the other, right.
And yes, is embraceable, and all of America loves him, but Richard Pryor's not for everybody. He's a little bit dangerous. That was kind of the vibe about them. And I feel like in a bigger way, Martin Luther King was the former for political activism, and Malcolm X was like, be careful with Malcolm X.
Yeah.
But in fact, I agree with you completely. I think, so as far as that goes, and you know, we don't have to talk about it in the abstract, because you saw what the fallout was for Colin Kaepernick.
Right.
A lot of people went after him. What, at the time, were you fully on board with what he was doing?
Yeah, so, you know, at that point, about a month before that was when you had Philando Castile shot by an officer. You had Alton Sterling killed by an officer. And then you had the shooting of the police here in Dallas right down the road, all within like 3 days. And so that was kind of that, for me at least, that tipping point where it was like, okay, something needs to be done. So you had a lot of people in the following weeks kind of standing up to be activists. You had LeBron James and all those guys at the ESPYs, I believe it was, that stood up and kind of talked about it. Some of my teammates met with the Philadelphia Police Commissioner, and talked to him about, you know, what can we do to help this thing. So you had a lot of people kind of galvanized to really attack this issue. But what Kaepernick did was so impactful because he didn't tell anybody, didn't make a statement, just by himself. He used the NFL stage and platform to draw attention to an issue, regardless if you wanted to ignore it or not. It was something you could not ignore. And I think what he did was, whether it was purposeful or not, it was kind of genius. And what he did after that showed athletes just how far our reach and influence really is. And so, you know, it was something that you saw the weeks after that, many guys, including myself, follow suit and who are already doing the work but haven't leveraged that celebrity like he has.
What about, he seems to be, and I, you know, where I sit, I think what he did was admirable, mm-hmm. you know? And I think people misguidedly making assumptions for why they're offended. Like, when you do that, this is why it offends me. Well, that's collateral damage. That's not the point of my statement. Right. My statement isn't to disrespect your service in the military at all.
Well, so the funny thing about it is most people who are disrespected about, you know, like you said, service, men and women who serve the country, the military, most of them who are complaining are not military service men and women. There are people who are offended for them. But,
so true. That's a big crisis. Yeah. Like, you're offended for me. Well, I'll let you know if I need to be offended.
Exactly. And I think one thing that Kaepernick did, when he first did it, he sat down and he talked to a couple men and women from our service units, and they said, you know, sitting down is disrespectful. You know, so that's why he adjusted it to the knee, specifically because he talked to men and women who served this country. Same thing when I came up with the protests and we were raising our fists. The first thing I did is I hit my buddy in the Air Force. I said, what do you think about what we're going to do? And he kind of shopped it around to the guys he's around, and they said, look, we understand what you're doing. I totally respect it. And I got so many family members who are currently serving or have served in the military and in our armed forces. And so some of that is not taken lightly, but he also went in front of a bunch of cameras and spoke about why he took a knee, why he's not acknowledging, or why he's protesting and demonstrating. But people ignore that, you know, because that would force them to then address what he's talking about. And I think that's the point where we are in America is we don't want you to interrupt our lives with these problems of other people that I don't face, you know, because, and I've gotten letters and all kind of stuff, and I've saved them because I'm going to address them at some point. But, you know, I've gotten letters like, you know, one guy's like, you know, I work really hard. I work for everything I got. I'm in the labor industry. And, you know, when I come home, I just want to watch football, and that's my time to get away. Don't you dare interrupt, you know, that peace for me. And it's like, I totally understand it, but at the same time, you know, it would be almost offensive if years from now things end up on the wrong side of history and we as athletes look back and complain about how things are but never really got involved and never use our leverage and platform to effectuate the change that we want to see. So, like you said, it's collateral damage at this point. Like, I'm sorry I messed up your Sunday evening or Sunday, you know, afternoon, but there are other people that need to get support.
Individually, a problem is, and this is a reality in the 21st century, you're the money you make a lot of money from the Philadelphia Eagles. Mm-hmm. But, of course, you know, you're a star, and so you have marketing opportunities and everything else, you have to take a hit for doing that. There's a price to be paid. Michael Jordan said, I don't get political, back when the times weren't, that didn't feel as severe, you know. But he said Republicans buy sneakers too, was his statement to get off the hook. Personally, I thought that was a shame. Given the example that Muhammad Ali put out the generation before, is that a thing? I mean, it seems to me like, I mean, listen, I'm a dumb guy who talks about sports and stuff, but, you know, I'll hit retweet. I get a lot of, you know, on the things that I believe in, and I get a lot of pushback. Like, how dare you talk about this? I follow you to give us dumb opinions on sports.
Well, I think that's one thing, too, that in 2017 we have to, like, pay attention to is differentiating real person-to-person interaction and what happens on social media. So, you know, over the last year, I've seen so many things on social media, like you said, where you have trolls just waving the internet, you know, looking to piss people off. And it'll trick you into thinking that this is how America really feels. When in all the interactions I've had face-to-face, I've never had anybody say anything disrespectful to me in regards of my protest or what I'm standing for. Even if they don't agree with me, they'll at least, you know, acknowledge that what I'm taking a stand for is courageous and that it needs to be done. And probably 90% of the interactions are all positive and supportive, because nobody would ever be able to look at you in your eyes and tell you some of the stuff that they write on Twitter or Instagram. Because they, when you stand in front of somebody, you see the humanity in that person. And I think that's where we're missing out. We're all so caught up behind our phones that we can say whatever and not see the person behind that hashtag or the person behind that handle. And it allows us to just feel free, you know. But in our person-to-person interaction, nobody really says that. So you can't get tricked into believing that if I go out here, somebody's going to say that to me.
That's my hunch. And specifically, you were there when Riley Cooper made his stuff. Was that, what were the next couple weeks of practice like?
So I was actually, I came the year after.
Oh, okay.
But, you know, I came into a locker room, and that was like one of the questions I had, like, you know. And, you know, it's unfortunate what transpired, but, you know, my experience with Riley, he was a great teammate. You know, he's one of those guys I didn't mind hanging out with. He was cool. Obviously, he regretted everything about that incident. But, you know, I think it's also, there's, you know, there's times where you need to also be able to admit mistakes and understand, you know, mistakes. Even if you have something that I don't agree with, it's fine. But, you know, that I'm sure in that locker room at that point in time, it had to be a little bit awkward.
Do you think did Chip Kelly and company, did they have to be like, hey, everybody, I don't want anybody hitting him extra hard or anything like that? Well, I would think legitimately.
I think there were some confrontations. There were a few confrontations for what I hear. I wasn't in the locker room, but, you know, the good thing about it is most of it was handled in-house and not out, you know, for the public. But, I mean, I couldn't imagine being in that locker room at that time. That was probably something nice. But everything, like I said, every interaction I've had with Riley has been great. Even since he's left the team, you know, he's stayed in contact. And so, I'm sure he regrets that every day. But it's one of those things where, you know, that's the good thing about football, though. It takes people from different backgrounds, different perspectives, different upbringings, and forces you to work together. So mistakes and conversations, tough ones, they're part of our everyday life. So we can talk about politics. We can, you know, have an issue like what Riley had, where it can be worked through and then moved on. And I think those are lessons like that we're trying to. Bread.
Hi guys, here's Bread.
Oh, thank you. Nice.
And we have more barbecue sauce over here.
Beautiful. Thank you so much.
You can just drop that on the plate.
Oh, okay. Is it anything else you guys need?
No.
I don't think so. Okay. I think we have more than enough.
Enjoy.
Thank you. But you know, those are lessons that we can kind of push on to society.
The nature of football makes your future more fragile, you know, your playing career more fragile because the injuries. But you guys must look at the other three big American leagues and just say, why the inequity versus the way other, you know, the way the NBA treats its players and so on, right? Or no?
Well, there's, you know, there's, you don't want to get caught up in looking at what other people are doing, because you'll always be upset, right? Like, you look at the NBA, and a lot of what I hear, especially from young players, are like, well, damn, they have guaranteed contracts. Why don't we have guaranteed contracts? It's like, well, you got to think about it from a business perspective. There's 100% injury rate in the NFL, which means that every single player who comes to the NFL will get hurt at some point in time. So if I guaranteed you your contract, as an owner, that would be bad business. And I'm like, everything is collectively bargained for. But if you look at our benefits package, if you look at the things that we have kind of on the back end as NFL players and where we're moving forward to, we have the best benefits out of any league out there. We get taken care of the most, which we need to, because we're in a warrior sport where, like I said, everybody's getting banged up, everybody's getting hurt. But there's always that, like, that checks and balances. You know, football in America is the top sport. When you talk about money coming in, and our league is booming, you know, so. And we got 47 to 53 guys on the team that we got to split this money with. So, as opposed to whatever, I don't even know how many guys are in the NBA team, but it's not 53.
No, right. Fewer guys that need the.
Right. It's the nature of the sport. I think we're moving in the right direction, but, you know, by no mistake are we behind or playing second fiddle to any league in this country.
Do you like, do you sit around and watch football when you're not playing?
The only time I'm not playing is the playoffs. So hopefully that will change that trend. But
you have a Monday night game. You have a bye week. You sitting around watching the rest of the league?
I'm a big fan of football. Like, honestly, I'm not close to being there yet, but one of my aspirations, the first thing I'll do once I'm done playing ball is I want to actually do the entire, like, game day experience. Like, I want to go tailgate.
This is
go
something.
Go hang out in the stands.
This is kind of like a mini tailgate.
You can do it.
I realized that a year or two ago. I was talking to Greg Olson, and I said that very thing to him. I said, like, at Carolina, you ever go to a game in Charlotte? When you're going up there, it smells so good. Mm-hmm. Kansas City, and I'm sure Houston. Mm-hmm. It must smell so good that you'd get tempted to stop over and, you know, pull over at a tailgate. And he said, I've never been to a tailgate because, of course, I'm always playing in that game. That makes me feel sad.
So in Philly, you know, we have to drive to the stadium. And one of the days I was driving by the big parking lot, and you just see all the people tailgating. I'm like, they're having so much fun. They're playing beer pong and cornhole. You smell all the brats and hot dogs. And I'm just like, man, I can't wait.
It's a cruel twist of fate.
It is. I went back to Columbus, to Ohio State, for homecoming. They were playing Rutgers, and we had a bye week, so I got to go back. And that was my first time tailgating. I caught up on my frat brothers. We brought a grill, everything. Got a parking spot. Got there at like 7:30 in the morning, and it was a 1 o'clock game, but we tailgated. That was my first time. I'm like,
I want you to invite me to the next one, because you could, just as I could go out and I could go out on the field with you and you could teach me a few things about NFL defense, I could teach you many things about, you know, beer and grilling food time before a game. You know?
One thing I learned, and, you know, like I said, it was my first tailgate, so it had a few hiccups. Like, you can't bring charcoal. You can't do a charcoal grill in the parking lot. You can only do propane. I learned that the hard way.
That's right. So, let's get those hot dogs. And then, like, 3.5 hours later, like, it's going to be ready soon.
Yeah, after you had the text message, come here, hey, go get a propane grill.
The Buckeyes won in overtime about, like, a half an hour ago. Right. This is going to be heated up about 45 minutes to an hour, then we're gonna eat. I don't want to be saccharine about this, but is it possible that maybe you could extract something from an NFL locker room? You guys are forced together in tight quarters, and you're forced to work for a common goal. It's not political. Obviously, you're trying to win games and win the Super Bowl, but is that somehow a model that society should look at and say, see, look, we get by. We're not beating each other up every day.
There are so many lessons to be learned in football, and that's why it's, I think, one of the greatest games ever created, is because you have literally a team of guys from 1,000 different backgrounds all of them are making different money. So you got, you have classes, you have different races, you have different upbringings, and all of them are forced to work together to do one thing, and that's win. And like, how do we win together as a team where everybody benefits? And that's, you know, that's what we want to do as a country, is how do we take everybody from all of these corners of America, different stages, different places in life, and bring them together to do one thing, to move forward as a country that benefits everybody. And so, in the locker room, you can't be sensitive. You have to be able to listen. You got to be able to talk and voice your opinion. And everything has to stay in-house. And that goal of winning and moving forward for everybody is always at the forefront. And I think once America can thicken its skin a little bit and not get pissed off because somebody disagrees with you or feels some other way, but be able to voice your own opinion, listen to a different opinion, and find common ground and move forward. And I think we can actually get to a place where we feel comfortable.
Well, I like that. You know, maybe it's a little simplistic, but I really do think that message that, look at what we're doing. We're getting by, and this is maybe something that you can expand into the way we act in common space and the rest of society. So you get the Lombardi, the physical one,
yep,
and then you get one further
just
the point.
Just in case I forgot it, you know, I got it tattooed on my arm.
What do you mean you forgot it?
You know, in case I, you know.
Oh, in case you did.
In case I forgot that I won a Super Bowl, or like look down and remind myself.
I don't think that's for you as much as it is for whatever company you're keeping. Like, oh, did I not mention?
Then I mentioned my Lombardi. I got a replica sitting in my man cave as well as a second reminder.
All respect to your family. Like, if you were a single guy, that would really be a great icebreaker. Like, yeah, what are you doing? Yeah, I don't, what have I been up to? This whole thing.
Right. I'm not one of those guys that wears their Super Bowl ring to like every event. Just does one of these all the time. Hey, put the big gaudy ring on. Like, oh yeah, I did win a Super Bowl.
Well, those I condemn those rings. You know, there's some dignity in the size of like. You ever see the Namath one? Like, it's all right. Oh. You could wear that. With the ones that have in the last 20 years or so, they're ridiculous.
So I will. The one we got for the Saints is a respectable one. It's nice. You look at it and say it's a Super Bowl ring, but it's not like.
Not like the size of a Miata, right?
But I've seen some of those Patriot rings, and they take up like a whole finger. They're like,
yeah. Who wears that? Now, what I would wear if I were a Hall of Famer, I would wear the gold jacket once a week. Not every day, because then it would be obnoxious. But I would wear it every week. And like just let everybody know.
Go to like a cigar lounge or something, just purposely.
We could do that,
in.
But I think I'd go more.
Would you
wear it here? If I wear a gold jacket, would I be sitting here with you in it? Answer is yes, I would.
Would you ever coat check it? You go to like a nice establishment. Sir, can we check your coat? I'm good.
No. It'll stay on my back. Yeah. Yeah. Would that be a weird if you had one of those? Would you wear it on a date, do you think?
That's too far. Yeah,
it is.
I'm not there yet, but if I was desperate enough, I'd just like create my own fake one. Yeah, made the Hall of Fame.
Nah, you know what? I like that. Do it yourself. Why wait and see if they give you one?
Yeah.
You know what? I think we've stumbled onto something.
We have stumbled. Create your own.
Hall of Fame, well, that's not what we're about. Jenkins and Damashek aren't about Hall of Fame. We're talking, this is the Hall of Great. We
Hall
should get just slightly darker
like
yellow.
A mustard.
We'll get that, and we'll get a little thing stitched on there, and we'll start giving them out to people we think deserve them.
The Hall of Great.
What do you think about that?
I like that.
All right, we've done it. We've done it all today, I think, Malcolm Jenkins. Do you feel satisfied with our conversation and meal?
I'm going to dive into this a little bit more, but I'm definitely satisfied.
Now I'm gonna fold this one up. Let's get him. I don't think a doggy bag will do, like a doggy suitcase
a doggy,
or something.
Like,
right, duffel bag.
Duffel bag, yeah.
Yeah, something like that. Hey, it's been great to talk to you. Admire all the great things you're doing that you're not required to do as a high-profile human being, but nevertheless, sticking your neck out there a little bit and hopefully making things a little bit better here in society.
I appreciate that.
Meantime, let's see you get a gold jacket and let's start to. We don't need their gold jacket anymore. We're not interested.
Mustard jackets.
You can give Jenkins one. If you want to give me one for the broadcast wing of the Hall of Fame, that's your business. But we're not interested because we already got the Hall of Great.
Hall of Great.
Thank you, Malcolm Jenkins.
See, I told you, Malcolm Jenkins, a swell fella. We appreciate you listening and or watching. Continue to do so. Again, a reminder, go on iTunes, do all the stuff, rate it, comment, and all that jazz. And or give it a look if you just listen to it. Give it a look on video as well, NFL.com/DDFP. That's it. We'll be back next week with more exciting action for you. In the meantime, thanks so much, football fans. It's been a thin slice of heaven.